every year. Every year we come to the beginning of Holy Week and we read a story that we all already know. And I think it's worth asking why. In some sense, it feels like the wrong time to read the Passion, because we start Holy Week by compressing the entire week into one celebration. We begin with the Gospel of the Palms and the procession into Jerusalem, which is at the beginning of the festival of Passover. And then immediately we go to the proclamation of the Passion, the end of the sacrifice, the true sacrifice of Passover made in Jesus. And yet, in some sense, we're just anticipating Good Friday when we will read the Passion according to John, even longer than the Passion according to Mark. So what are we doing reading the Passion this Sunday at the beginning of Holy Week, every year, year in, year out, even though we all already know the story? Let me tell you, it's also not one that I look forward to preaching. First, because you've already been listening to now two Gospels, and one of them a quite lengthy Gospel. And secondly, because what are you going to say about the death of Jesus again another year? Let me offer you this then. It is worth noting that when the early church went to remember Jesus, the story of his passion, the story of his crucifixion and death, leading, yes, of course, to his resurrection, but this story, the way he was arrested, the way he was persecuted, the way he was abused and tortured and nailed to a cross and died, this became the core of the narrative. I can't imagine other places where we would do that. When we lose someone that we've loved, we don't tell the expanded, painful, terrible story of how they died over and over and over again. We tell other stories about them. We tell the stories that reveal their personality. We tell the stories that show them when they were joyful. We tell the stories in which we remember our love for them and their love for us. But we don't tend to tell the stories of their death over and over again. We spend the rest of the year telling other stories about Jesus. And then we come to the beginning of Holy Week, and year after year after year, we tell the story of Jesus' death. Because I think this is the story that tells us who Jesus truly is. This is the story that tells us who Jesus is for us and how much Jesus loves us and invites us to realize how much we love Jesus. This story of Jesus' crucifixion and death. It's only by recognizing the passion of Jesus that we learn who Jesus truly is. And there are all sorts of offers to us that we could somehow sidestep Jesus' suffering and death. Perhaps that we can sidestep our own suffering and death as well. To want to say something else is really the true story about Jesus. We'll extract just his moral teachings and ask, what would Jesus do? Or we'll focus just on the fact that Jesus was merciful and non-judgmental, and we'll hold that up as the icon of Jesus. That's not what the first Christians did. That's not how the early church remembered Jesus. When they gathered to remember Jesus, they remembered his passion and his death, leading to his resurrection. That's how they knew who Jesus was. It is tempting to edit parts, the difficult parts of our story and of Jesus' story out, or if not to edit them, at least not to dwell on them. To say, yes, we know that's there, but we won't spend much time with it. And I think it is to our great benefit, to our great hope, that the church instead invites us year after year after year to read the whole Passion at the beginning of Holy Week, to remember who Jesus is for us, to read the whole Passion and to remind us that when we come here to celebrate Eucharist together, when we come to this altar, we come in a very real sense before the cross again. We come to that same sacrifice, the sacrifice made at the Last Supper, the sacrifice made on the cross. We come to that same life raised up in the resurrection, here and present now for us today in the Eucharist we share together. And that's how we know who Jesus is. At the end of the Passion, the centurion looks at Jesus, looks at a man who has just been executed by the most powerful reign ever known in human history, a man put to death by the Roman Empire, a man who had been scourged and abused and mocked, a man whose mission had clearly failed. The centurion looks at him, having just died on the cross, and says, "Truly this man was the Son of God." We are called here today to learn to recognize that. And even if I had anything to say to make that any easier, I wouldn't say it. Because it shouldn't be easy. We should confront at the beginning of Holy Week that we have this difficult memory, this dangerous memory of Jesus, who to the world looks like a failure. And yet somehow is, as we're reminded in the first reading, a voice spoken to the weary us, to rouse us. As we're reminded in the second reading, Jesus, who, though he shared equality with God, took the form of a slave, our form, so that God could raise him and lift him up. So we're invited to look at the cross. We're invited to look at our own suffering. We're invited when we go out into the world to look at the suffering of our brothers and sisters. And to spend the time we need to, the difficult and dangerous and uncomfortable time, to look at that year after year, time after time, until we too can say with the centurion, "Truly, there is the Son of God."